Thanks for everybody for showing up. It's been almost 2 years now, I think, since we last met. So tonight we have two pre-filing meetings, and if just refresh your memory from the past we have, it's just a pre-filing. So they have not made an application yet. This is just an opportunity for them to present their project for us to get an idea of what they're going to be proposing if they decide to submit an application. And it's an opportunity for us to ask some questions, as well as to discuss any waivers that they're requesting, and then also get some feedback from some of the public that have logged in. Okay. Do we want to do the public portion then first?
Sure. So at this time, Jason on Zoom, this would be the time to make public comment.
Hi. Just wanted to say, in regards to the RFTC proposal, I submitted some an email to the village administrator with some specific comments about it. Just specifically about the waiver requests. I think some of the requests that the RFTC sorry, the waivers that they're requesting are not really appropriate. In particular, the landscaping plan, an environmental impact study, and then an impact on the village services, because I think this proposal will have impact on all of those things and would like to see some more details about that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is that it? Is anyone here in person that would like to?
I just also have a hi, Carrie Palmer.
Can you come up to the microphone? Thank you. Yeah.
Also, a comment in regards to the RFPC proposal. And I know this is just the pre-filing conference that materials that have been submitted. I just was wondering if we can discuss the standards for review that have already been confirmed, particularly B and C, which is talking about, you know, that this proposal will not be detrimental to or endanger public health safety. But I'm particularly concerned about just. I live across the street, my own comfort in the village, the ability to have a dark night sky, all of that. And then C, the proposed use of accommodation will not diminish the use or enjoyment of the other properties in the area. So that's just my primary concern. And if the calculation doesn't confirm, no impact to.
Could you repeat your name for the record? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else for the public comment? No? Okay. So we're going to start with the Park District. The first one's up. Okay, so the pre-filing from the Park District. State your name and tell us about your project.
Put down the next.
Put down.
Put down.
Got it. Hi, I'm Mike Slutton, Executive Director.
Forest Park District.
And with me tonight is our board president, Mike Grant, right here, and our land planning consultant, Sarah Dreyer from JSC. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your listening to our presentation tonight. We're here tonight to talk about the redevelopment of Constitution Park. District has spent the last 18 months planning stages of this project, including we have already held more public meetings in the last 15 months on this project. The first one being in the July of 2023. That meeting, we had minimal feedback, but it was all positive. The only question we had at that meeting was preservation of our memorial tree center in the park, which, of course, we would be saving regardless. We also had followed up two meetings in September or in August and September of 2023. Mostly that was to discuss the playground design, which would be a fully inclusive playground. So we wanted to make sure we were designing it And then finally, we had a fourth meeting last August, 2024. And as your notes will say on the back page, nobody showed up. So I think the residents are satisfied and well knowledge of what the project is selling. So, then I'm going to go back here. Yeah, first slide.
There was an intro slide.
Yep.
Ah, okay. So, so Constitution is a it's on the north side of the town. It's at one of our neighborhood parks. It's bordered by Franklin, Greenwood, and Jackson. And to the south, it's bordered by Willard School. We have a partnership with D90 for sharing the space between the two entities, the open space. And that's been ongoing and working real well and will be continuing even after this development. The amenities in this park currently right now are we have a existing playground at the corner of Franklin and Greenfield. This playground is approximately 20 years old and has it's gone out of its life cycle. It's due for replacement. Typically anything over 15 years should be reconsidered. We do have a lighted sand volleyball ice rink. The lighting is mostly for the ice rink. So there are two poles. You can kind of see one in the background on that one sitting high in the trees, but there's one on the north and the south side of that amenity right there on both sides of the net. We have a soccer field located in between or adjacent to the playground and the sand volleyball in the open area. We also have where Willard School is located, the ball field there. We do microfields also over there at the same time. And then we also have a porta potty, which is not showing. Oh, there's the ball field too. So that is a D90 facility. And we're working again as this project's, we've included D90 in this to make some changes with that. So here is the new design that we've developed. You can see the significant, well, we have a new, as I mentioned, the new ADA all-inclusive playground that's at the top left of the plan. You can see right there directly to the south would be, we've slightly moved over and relocated the sand volleyball and the ice rink. We've also reoriented at 90 degrees. And then in between, we have a shelter with a single men's, single woman's bathroom in it. That's the only change of use, really, in this whole project. Everything else is just a redevelopment of an existing facility. That's really the reason we're here. So, and then the you can see the plaza that's between the playground and sand volleyball. I talked about D90 having in Willard School the ball field. We are now moving that onto the park site. And then what will happen over where the ball field is right now, that will become the soccer field. That gives D90 more open spaces, which is something they appreciate as part of this project. So here's a picture of the proposed playground. I went one too many. So it's one unit. It's for 2 to 12 years old. Again, it's fully ADA inclusive, wheelchair accessible on all the amenities on the playground. And then there's the backside view of it right now. So as I said, we're proposing putting in a new shelter. It would be the shelter space is 20 feet by 20 feet. And then on the one end will be a single men's, single woman's bathroom, and then a small storage room for utilities will be located there. It's that is what we plan to look, the structure look pretty much like. The only difference, there won't be a cupola. So that's, you can take that off. That won't be added in. We will have approximately 3 picnic tables under it, which is the picnic tables we have out there right now. The only difference now, it's going to be covered instead of out in the open. I'm going to. So, as I said, the sand volleyball is being relocated, but we're going to keep the existing poles up. What we are going to do is put in new fixtures. Right now, they're metal halide. We're going to replace them with LED. Those are the red dots you can see. So the lights are still facing north and south as they are right now. And that it shows better probably on your paperwork than up here. But the blue area, all those blue dots, that's zero candle. So you can see on there that the spillage pretty much is limited to around the sand volleyball ice rink area. And it does not exceed outside our property lines of the park right now. Again, we have an agreement with D90 on this project to flip-flop the ball field and the soccer field. So we will be relocating the 7x7 field, which is a smaller soccer field, it's not full size, from our site over to D90, which would be just north of where their playground is located right now. We will have to do some tree removal. We listed them out here. We do have three fair quality locust trees, one good quality maple, and one maple will be transplanted. Over at the playground, we're going to have to take out one poor quality multi-stem tree. There's a memorial tree that will be replaced, and a second poor quality multi-stem. So we've measured 88 inches. And actually, one of the locusts is dying right now. So it's going to be removed probably this winter. But so we have 88 inches, and we'll keep that number. So we would plan to replace that with 88 inches of new trees, either in that park or a park within our system right now. So we're currently putting in about 25 trees a season right now. We're in a planting cycle to keep trying to keep up with the loss of what we have between projects and just what we're losing right now in the parks from natural death or disease or bug. There is no use changes. So we don't see any increase in parking on this project. And did I just lose something? Hold on. I'm going to see if maybe a slide didn't go. Oh, no, that was it. So the other thing is, as part of our application, we are asking for waivers in the shadow study as we don't see any structures Sarah, how about the shelter or the shelter is no more than 16 feet, we believe, right? At the peak. Right. We're asking for a waiver on the economic analysis because we don't believe there is any impact this project has, and the traffic study. Again, we don't see, there's no use change for this. So we're not adding any amenities or anything that would increase the use of the park at this point. So does anyone have any questions?
The two lights that are on either side of the new sand volleyball ice skating rink, are those would be new then there?
So the two poles are there right now.
They're there, okay.
Yes, there's metal halide. Those are metal halide lights. We'll be moving those over with the move of the sand volleyball ice rink area. So they are still north-south oriented, facing the same direction. So we didn't turn them east-west because that obviously would have an impact on the neighbors on, what was that, Jackson, Frank? Yeah.
One question, please. Just the soccer fields, I may have misunderstood. Did you say you're relocating one field?
So the field that's currently in the park right now, we have it's a 7x7 yeah. field. So that will locate over onto school property. And it actually could probably be slightly bigger there, but we'll use it. We'll use the extra space as an opportunity to rotate the field around.
Thanks. Makes sense.
There's one other thing I forgot. No, no, I missed it. But so we did apply for an OSLI grant for this. This is a $1.6 million project. We applied for a $600,000 grant We're hopeful that we'll get it, and we should, based on religious, maybe we'll find out in about 6 weeks. So that would be a great benefit to this project.
Is there any type of water retention system that's being installed similar to what was done at Keystone?
No, because no, we don't have any water retention system in this one.
No requirements though, as far as
there's no requirements for.
Any other questions?
Which one is it? What is I said? So the, right now, this project's scheduled for June 15th.
You got the wrong part. You've got Keystone instead.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Believe it or not, we're writing another application to come to you for the Keystone at the same time. Yes. Yes. It will be fenced too. So while it's heavily used, we also need we're working between the baseball and soccer seasons. So soccer will be on that field all the way to June 15th. We need to get it grass down or seed down or however we're going to do that by early fall so we can get that park back in use by the following year.
Playground surfacing is poured in place rubber, and that has to be installed when it's 55 degrees and rising, so we can't do it at cold temperatures.
So just to give you an example, when we did Washington last year, we were like the last 2 days we could get it in, and that was October 1st. So that was as late as we can go with that.
So I just wanted to clarify. Now I'm on. So what happens in June 15th of 2025?
If everything goes well, we'll be fencing off the site. We'll start with the park site. We won't. We'll do it. The ball field will be done after the fact. That will be the probably what we'll call phase two. So the site will be closed. We'll begin demo, and then the project, we're expecting about 8 weeks, roughly.
But no, you're talking about doing the seeding or the sod in the fall of that year?
So then we, yeah.
So does the park stay closed until the grass? The
park would be closed from June 15th to August 15th, approximately.
And then, but then the grass will be ready to go?
Well, then the hope would be, yeah, so we would then get... Everything would be seeded in late summer.
Of
25.
25.
Right, next year. Get it established over during the fall. And then, you know, we have a reasonable stand of turf then the following spring.
Right. So no soccer will be played on it in the fall.
No. Right.
So that you might want to just spell out on this letter as well.
Okay. I mean, we don't use every park for soccer or baseball on an annual basis. We're always rotating out some space. So this would be part of that rotating schedule this year. And if you look at it right now, it's on the schedule to rotate out. It's not in the best shape right now. We would have closed it after the summer next year anyways.
Now, the shelter that's going up, will that be accessible to people? Next summer?
The
bathrooms?
The bathrooms.
The shelter, whatever.
Well, no, the park won't open till approximately late August at the playground. Because at that point, it would be the playground and the bathrooms would be ready at that point.
So really, we're looking at the.
It's going to be a pretty. It's going to be a pretty big construction. Like
he's got to identify.
Try not to speak.
No, you just need to identify yourself and come up to the mic so we have it recorded. Just to clarify, so the soccer field, the baseball, the shelter, all that would be opening at the same time, correct? You're not looking at phasing where the soccer field or the baseball field would be available first.
Right, right. So what we would do, the park section we'll do first, and then as we'll move the only thing on the other side is taking out the ball field and some grading work. To get that we'll move fairly quickly, but we'll keep that open as long as we can so that field can be used during construction. So I guess within, you know, week five, week six, we'll tear that out, take out the ball mix. If we can reuse it, we'll use it on the other site and do whatever grading work and get it seeded to that.
I do want to clarify the shadow study that you're requesting be waived. We don't have in our application of requirements a shadow study, correct?
Not specifically. There are renderings that are required as part of the application, but not a specific shadow study for this.
So we would not need to waive it if it doesn't exist in our application of requirements?
Correct.
Okay. That would just leave that there are two items to be waived. That you're requesting, which is the economic analysis and then the traffic study.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Is the only other comment for the economic analysis, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the past when we have waived that, we have done, was it 13B and 13C, but not 13A. I mean, so 13A is the financial capability of the applicant to complete the proposed development. And so we've typically not given a waiver on that because we were asking you to show proof of funds that you'd be able to complete the project. Martin,
that's correct.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. Do we move forward now with the discussing?
Correct, yes. Waivers? We can entertain a motion to grant or deny the waiver request.
So we need a motion to waive either number 12 under the application requirements 10.19.6. Is there a motion?
I'd make a motion to waive application requirements 13B and 13C.
Second? Second? Should we do that?
Yep. First? Yeah, we can do it in.
Okay.
I'll call the.
All well on that
rule. Okay, Member Fishman? Member Martin?
Yes.
Member McColl?
Yes.
Member Shoemaker?
Yes.
Member Yanaki?
Yes.
Chairman Crosby?
Yes. Okay, so that waiver has been granted. Again, that is for 13 B and C. So the other request was the traffic study waiver for number 12. Which is a professional traffic study acceptable to the village showing the proposed traffic circulation pattern within and in the vicinity of the area of the development, including the location and description of public improvements to be installed, including any streets and access easements. Is there a motion? Okay. No? All right, then that has been denied. Correct?
Correct. A failure to have a motion would effectively deny it. I think it would be more comfortable from the village's perspective to have a motion to deny that waiver request. if that is the prerogative of the review board.
Just so you know, the traffic study is thousands of dollars. I mean, it's for use that's already existed. I mean, it's up to you guys, but it's your money. So we could put it better into the park instead of.
So I move to waive the traffic study.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay. All right. Is there any discussion? If
you want. Yeah, I think the purpose of this improvement is to encourage additional use of the park. At least that's one of the purposes. And people get to the park by walking or by bike or by car. And if you're trying to encourage more use of the park, I think it's, you know, for whatever the cost is, which is probably very minimal compared to your budget of $1.6 million to do the work, you ought to give us some assurance that there won't be an increase of vehicular traffic or parking that's going to adversely impact the neighbors, because you've got neighbors to the east, the west, and the north that are all single-family homes, and you've got one very small parking lot at the Willard School. So you're not going to start construction till June. I don't see any problem in, you know, getting a traffic study that backs up your assurance that there's not going to be any adverse effect on to the village from this improvement.
I understand that, but again, we're not changing any of the use in this park.
Are you trying to
encourage? It's a ball field. It's a ball field.
Are you trying to encourage more use of the park?
Are we good? Pardon me?
Are you trying to encourage more use of the park?
We're going to always encourage people to use the park. Are we trying to encourage more on this? Not necessarily. This is a replacement project of existing amenities. Again, even the shelter that we have, we're not adding any more picnic tables than are already out there. The difference is it's just covered now.
It's a bathroom too, isn't it?
Hmm?
You're going to have two bathrooms there. Are there bathrooms at the park now?
There's a porta potty out there right now.
Is there a difference between a porta potty and a bathroom and a structure?
Well, there's a difference. Okay.
One thing is Washington Park has bathroom. Keystone Park has a bathroom.
Right.
I think Constitution Park deserves a bathroom.
That's fine. I got no problems with bathrooms.
Any additional comments? No? Okay. So the roll?
Yep. So the motion to grant the waiver for traffic study will go. Member Fishman? Member Martin?
No.
Member McColl?
Yes.
Member Shoemaker? Member Yanaki?
Yes.
And Chairman Crosby?
Yes.
Okay, that is a 3-3 tie. I will have to check what that means for this.
It means it doesn't pass.
That would be my inclination that the waiver request would not be granted at this time.
Okay, I think that's it for the waivers then. So now you have your information that you need to determine if you're going to submit an application or not. And that's it, right? Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll move on to the second pre-filing meeting. This is with River Forest Tennis Club. At this time, I do want to just ask any board members if they have a conflict of interest with the tennis club.
I do. I am an active member, and I put the presentation together. And I'm the lead project, so I feel at this time it'd be appropriate if I recuse myself for this project within the DRB.
I'm a member of the River Forest Tennis Club. I have no vote at the tennis club based on my type of membership. I have not participated in any of the planning of this project. I have not participated in the decision making to bring it before the board. I think that I can fairly judge this brief, and that this is only a pre-filing conference. We're not making any recommendations to the trustees, so I think I can fairly participate in this and make a make comments that would help with move this project to the application stage.
I'm also a member of the tennis club, but I'm, like Frank, a senior member, so I do not have a vote the tennis club. So I also think, as a longtime member of the community, that I can make an unbiased decision.
So I feel like I should disclose that my son, who I wrote the check for, was a member for the summer as a junior member, but is not that has expired since the summer has ended. So, but I can render a fair and impartial opinion as well.
And also senior member for Bridges, and I think I could be impartial.
Very good. Okay, so who's representing the you are? Okay, there's anyone else?
Hi, Elias Yanaki. I'll be leading this presentation. We have with us Sandy Graves, who's our current president.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for hearing our proposal again, Elias Yanaki. This is a pretty comprehensive deck. We tried to make it as comprehensive as possible. I'll go through the first couple of slides, then pause for questions, and then we can kind of you guys take the lead on which slides you'd like me to go forward on. Goal, it's pretty simple. All we're trying to do is add lights to our tennis courts in two manners, responsibly, fiscally, as well as collaborating with our neighbors, our village, and our members. Why we're doing this, we want to just increase the time that we could spend on the courts with our children. That's it. Right now, 4 to 7 p.m., that time slot during the day is the most sought after court time, so which is wonderful. We have a very active community playing tennis. We'd like to see if we can just push the adults a couple of hours later so the parents and the kids can play after school before bedtime. We have a whole list of considerations. We tried to be as comprehensive as possible based on feedback that we've received from the community. I'll go through a couple of them now. We would like with this project to maintain our positive impact on the community, both River Forest as well as surrounding towns, communities, as well as members and non-members value to them as well. We want to minimize, if not completely eliminate, any light spillage outside of the courts. We want to ensure the lights are used on an individual basis and only when people are there. So only one court will be lit if that court has players on it. We want to minimize any visual disruptions at all. We're trying to do that by having shorter and fewer poles, light poles. We want to have almost no impact to traffic and noise, and we want to have no impact to our season. Our season right now is mid-April to mid-October. That's 6 month span. Adding lights will not adjust that at all. Value to our neighbors. Right to our larger community. We feel that we are, RFGC is the community. We are the neighborhood. We represent 400 families across many towns, River Forest, and towns right next to us. We also host swim lessons and tennis lessons for members and non-members. This past summer was the first time, to my recollection, that we didn't have swim lessons because, again, we're a volunteer-based club. And to my understanding, the amazing swimming coach, bless you, wasn't able to do it based on time commitments. I'm hoping we can get back to that in the future. The second value for having these lights on these courts is the only other courts in town that are lit at night is Keystone. So all of us are playing when we want to play tennis at Keystone. If we're able to light our courts at RFTC, you're going to have 400 families not trying to press time against many other wonderful activities at Keystone. About RFGC, quickly to tell you a little bit about ourselves, right? We are a family-oriented club. We are a volunteer-based, no, we're a volunteer-required club. We require every single member to be on three committees, and that's how the club is run. We have a very small staff that's mostly for groundskeeping, and give them all the credit in the world because we couldn't keep the club going without them. but all of the day-to-day activities, events, everything is run by volunteer members. We're open to everyone. We encourage anyone to apply. And we've contributed a lot to all of our surrounding communities in the past, and we hope to continue doing that in the future. On the technical side, right, light spillage, that was one of our biggest points to make sure that we minimize. Lighting technology today compared to 10 or 15 years ago is completely different. It's vastly, vastly superior today. For example, it's LED lighting. They're anti-glare, indirect, and full cutoff. Full cutoff means you've got the pole, the light fixture. Full cutoff means there's no light spillage above the light fixture, right? So it's another way to reduce light spillage. Lighting technology now allows for shorter poles and fewer poles, which is great. Excuse me. Spillage itself at foot candles, it is a 0 foot candle at Lathrop. It is a 0.38 foot candles at Jackson. Those are our two residential streets, and I've got a slide comparing what that really is to garages or office or like something like a room like this. These do not take into account the trees, the bushes, the windscreens that are all installed. So in reality, these are higher than actual light spillage when you take into account all of those factors. The courts themselves, courts, again, will only be lit on an individual basis and only if someone is playing on those courts. And we're going to also ask the members to book the centermost courts first and then work their way toward the courts that are closer to Jackson. So we'll hopefully minimize light spillage as well that way too, and noise. Pole heights, we're going very short lights, 30-foot lights. They're in line with our existing flagpole, which is great. And at 30 feet, they're way, way shorter than you see other parks in town and surrounding towns at 50 and 75 feet, and you have enormous width poles and really tall poles. You don't want to do that, or we'd like to not try to do that. And next, noise and traffic, and we anticipate no noise increase, no traffic changes. The idea here is RFTC is only open for 6 months out of the year. Adding lights will not increase the number of months. It'll increase the hours in the day. Okay. Our courts are clay. They're not like Keystone, which is hard court. We have to water our courts, and we water them from the underground. So we need to make sure that no one's on them. They're not, they can't be open before a freeze or right after a freeze, right? So adding lights is not going to change that. It's weather dependent, and it's still going to be mid-April to mid-October. Our pool is already open until 9 p.m. every night. Lights are open until 9 p.m. every night on our pool. Kids have a blast there, and they're much louder than the people playing tennis, which is wonderful. They have a great time in the pool. Most of our members, many, many members, walk or bike to the tennis club. They don't drive. A lot of times if you walk by the club, you'll see everyone playing tennis. There's going to be lots of parking spots open. We have a small parking lot, and there's always space there because most people bike or walk. One thing that was brought up last time in 2012 when we brought this application up was property maintenance, year-round property maintenance, and we've solved that. Leaf cleanup, snow shoveling, and clay runoff were issues back in 2012. All three have been addressed. We have no, this lighting project will have no impact to any of the property values for our neighbors. Safety and security was big for us as well. We want to make sure the property is secure at night. We already have staff until 9 p.m. We're suggesting that the lights stay on from 6 a.m. or ability to be on from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. So we would have staff until the end of the night. We also are going to install more security cameras and cameras on the courts themselves. We already have lots of security cameras, but we are going to add some more. We also would like to ensure that only members get on the court. And what I mean there is that we don't want someone just running on the courts, turning all 10 courts on and then leaving, right? So to prevent that, we're going to have pins, lighting pins that will only be sent to the members and updated on a monthly or bi-monthly basis to make sure the lights are only on, again, when they're supposed to. We have many, many rules at RFTC, and all those rules and policies will continue on post lights. Alcohol is an example. Liquor and alcohol is never allowed on the courts. It's only allowed on the premises when we have events like dinners or things like that. So that won't change at all. I'll pause there. Those are kind of the high level. And I'm happy to take any questions.
All right. I think you, if you file the application, I think you need to be more specific on when the lights are going to be available. You know, your the written that you submitted says September. You talked about tonight that the clubs plays tennis till October. I played tennis last Saturday, which is November. So if it's your intention to have the lights available as long as the courts are available, I think last year we played until December. So I think you need to be either propose a cutoff as to when there'll be no lights permitted, or, you know, tell it like it is, which is the as long as the courts are playable, the lights will work.
Because the courts are playable even after the sprinkler systems.
Right. The courts are playable until the first freeze, basically. And I think we were playing in December last year.
Okay.
All right. I also think, I wonder, are the lights really going to be turned off at 10 o'clock? Or is there some way that somebody who's, you know, tennis players want to finish the game or the set, will there be a way that the lights can be manipulated so they can continue to be used after 10 o'clock? You know, the pool closes at 9. What's the reason to keep the lights on? These are all questions to, you know, to
address before.
You know, if the pool closes at 9, what's the rationale of keeping the lights on for another hour until 10 o'clock and, you know, keeping the club open that additional time? And I also think that it would be nice if not only did you encourage people to turn the lights on certain courts, away from the single family, but, you know, you could probably program it so somebody had to turn the light on court 3 before they turned it on court 6. That would protect the single family houses on Jackson and Lathrop. So those are just some of the thoughts that I think you ought to address if you go ahead and file an application.
I appreciate that. Absolutely. Well, one comment on the schedule. There's a master schedule that will be for the lights, so no one can turn them on before a certain time or after. It just wouldn't be technically allowed. Like, you can't flip the switch. It just won't work. There'll be a master schedule and an individual court schedule. But I'll put that and I'll highlight that, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's similar to the lights at Keystone for paddle. Yep.
They just shut off.
They go off and there's no overriding.
Yeah.
But he does bring up a good point, because in here, the document, it says 6-month season from April to September.
It's yes, so, and I apologize. It should say mid-April to mid-September has been historically, but we'll expand that also to if weather dependent, it can stay open.
Historically, right. It's been a lot longer than mid-September.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
And what time frame are you thinking of?
So we're asking for 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. That's the master schedule. We will anticipate most usage will be around 8 p.m. and in the beginning, in the end of the season. In the middle of the summer, you're not going to need them really. It's just going to be the late night between the 8 p.m. on in the beginning and the end.
Have you gotten community feedback from the houses around there?
Well, this is our first step here, or okay. Third step. Our okay. Fourth step will be scheduling the neighbor.
Okay. Any other questions?
I do think it would be interesting, though, if when you did your light study, if you at least factored in the windscreens, because the windscreens are on, you know, the north, the east, and the south sides of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would probably, you know, cut down the light spillage further than even what the minimum spillage that you think you'll achieve from the new type lights.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Is what you've shown so far does not factor in any of the trees on the
no,
the
no
east
trees,
side, right?
No bushes. Yeah, and the light and the pictures I have in here show all the large bushes, all the trees, and the windscreens across along the property.
Okay.
And the lighting study does not include any of those three. But I'm going to speak to the lighting vendor to ask if it's feasible to include them as an estimate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you have a number of waivers that you're requesting. So what's the best way to go about doing this? Read through all of these, like read each one line by line?
Is that Can I add something about the waivers, if you don't mind?
Sure.
Because just now I'm kind of better understanding the waiver process. We might amend that document. If an application requirement, an individual one, simply doesn't apply to the project, is it appropriate or acceptable, instead of asking for the waiver, just to include a statement that says this project does not impact this piece? Is that acceptable as opposed to asking for an official waiver?
I think if we need an official waiver. Frank, can you, what do you?
No, I don't think so. I think that in the past, you know, we have, rather than vote on 9 waivers or 10 waivers, I mean, if for example, there aren't going to be any new covenants recorded against the property, I think when they file their application, they'll just say that as far as application requirement B9, there are none.
Okay.
And I think it's better to deal with application requirements that don't matter to this project, to any project, by having that kind of statement rather than having us grant any applicant, you know, a large number of waivers.
Okay.
And if you look at what the park district just did, you know, they had a lot of language in there that certain application requirement didn't apply. And so when they file their application, whether it's the park district or the tennis club or anybody else, they can just say that there's there are no environment impact studies required by the law on this project. I think that's the clean way to deal with it.
So that would mean that you'd be withdrawing any request for
so waivers. If that's the case, absolutely, I agree. I will only ask for 2, please. The first is number 12, the traffic study. Reason being, the project's not going to impact parking, traffic circulation patterns, or easements. As well, I believe in 2012 when we applied last, I believe RFGC did ask for the traffic waiver and was granted. And the second piece is just 13B and C. 13A, the financial capability of the applicant, no worries. But 13B and C, the economic viability and economic impact, I don't believe apply. So we'll only ask for those 2, please, 12 and 13B and C.
Okay, so then is there a motion to grant a waiver for, let's just, I guess, do both of them, the traffic study as well as the economic viability and impact? That'd be 13B and C, not including 13A.
Well, I think we ought to deal with them separately like we did for the park district.
Okay. So I guess then let's start with, are there any comments with the traffic study?
Yeah, I think, like I said, for the park district, you know, things have changed over the last 12 years, and I don't see any problem with requiring a traffic study, even if the results of it are what Mr. Yanaki says, that there's no increased traffic and there's plenty of parking, you know, then we've got something to base our decision on, rather than just, you know, a statement from the applicant that there's not going to be any increased traffic.
Any other comments for the traffic study? All right, then is there a motion to approve a waiver for the traffic study?
Waive it or
waive it?
Yeah. Well, it could be a motion to deny the waiver request.
Deny the waiver. Yeah.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Member Fishman? Member Martin?
Yes.
Member McColl?
Yes.
Member Shoemaker? Member Yanaki? Well, Member Crosby?
No.
Okay. The motion to deny that waiver request is approved 4-1.
Okay, so let's move on to the economic viability and impact. Are there any comments for that waiver? Again, that's for 13B and C. A, we would still be required the financial capability of the applicant to complete the proposed development. No comments? Okay, is there a motion to approve?
All right, I move that we approve the request for a waiver of application 13B and C.
Is there a second?
Member Fishman? Member Martin?
Yes.
Member McColl?
Yes.
Member Shoemaker? And Chairman Crosby?
Yes. Okay.
If I may ask, Chairman,
yeah.
Just this is our first time doing this myself. So is there anything you would recommend that we should add to this application or adjust or include that would help provide a more complete application when we submit it?
I don't have any comments for that, but is anyone else, is there anything else that you
yeah, feel I think lacking? I think you have to be careful when you're looking at the standards, particularly that we're supposed to judge this by. You know, one standard is that there's no adverse economic impact on the neighborhood. E, the proposed use or combination of uses will not diminish property values in the vicinity. I don't think you can address that by having you or Sandy get up and say it's not going to impact the values of the neighborhood. I think there are other ways of providing that information that are better and give us more information on which to make our recommendation.
Thank you.
Any suggestions on how to do that?
Well, I think the most common way that we've seen in the past is have a realtor other than a member of the tennis club, you know, take a look at the values of the property currently, and then assess if there are lights, and if the lights are on till 10 o'clock at night for 8 months or 7 months of the year, you know, how might that impact the property values in the vicinity? Mm-hmm. And I think you have to look at all these standards that David and the rest of us are going to judge the application by. And, you know, decide if there aren't others that where you need some, you know, you need some information to back up your statements so that we have something on which to base our recommendation. And when it gets to the village board, you know, they've got evidence, they've got proof of whether or not the standard has been met other than just a statement in the application that it's not going to have any impact or it's good for the village. And these comments apply to every application that we're asked to consider. We just haven't met for almost 2 years. So some of this is maybe tough to remember that we can't just act upon, you know, the fact that you get up there and tell us that everything is real good.
Thank you. I agree.
All right. Well, thank you. Anything else? Any other comments? All right. You have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All right. What did we say?
Aye.
Aye.
All in favor.
Yeah, all in favor. Yeah.
Aye. Aye. Thank you.